The Bhagavad Gita, chapter 14, text number 6.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
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 Tatra
Tattvam
Vimalatvat
Prakashakam
Anamayam Sukha Sanghena Vadhati Jnana
Sanghena
Cha
Anaga
Tatra Sattvam Nirmalatvat
Tatra Sattvam Nirmalatvat
Prakashakam Manhamayam
Prakashakam Manhamayam
Sukhasanghena Badnati
Sukhasanghena Badnati
Jnanasanghena Chanaga
Jnanasanghena Chanaga
Tatra Sattvam Nirmalatvat
Tatra Sattvam Nirmalatvat
Prakashakam Manhamayam
Prakashakam Manhamayam
Sukhasanghena Badnati
Sukhasanghena Badnati
Jnanasanghena Chanaga
Jnanasanghena
Tatra Thereafter Sattvam
Mode of goodness
Nirmalatvat
Being purest in the material world
Prakashakam
Eliminating
Anamayam
Without any sinful reaction.
Sukha. Happiness. Sanghena.
Association.
Vadnati.
Conditions.
Jnana. Knowledge. Sanghena. Association. Cha.
Also.
Anagha. O sinless one. Translation and purport by His Divine Grace Srila Prabhupada. O sinless one, the mode of goodness, being purer than the others, is illuminating, and it frees one from all sinful reactions. Those situated in that mode develop knowledge, but they become conditioned with the concept of happiness. Purport. The living entities conditioned by material nature are of various types. One is happy, another is very active, and another is helpless. All these types of psychological manifestations are causes of the entity's conditioned status in nature. How they are differently conditioned is explained in this section of Bhagavad Gita. The mode of goodness is first considered. The effect of developing the mode of goodness in the material world is that one becomes wiser than those otherwise conditioned. A man in the mode of goodness is not so much affected by material miseries, and he has a sense of advancement in material knowledge. The representative type is the Brahmana, who is supposed to be situated in the mode of goodness. This sense of happiness is due to understanding that in the mode of goodness, one is more or less free from sinful reactions. Actually, in the Vedic literature, it is said that the mode of goodness means greater knowledge and a greater sense of happiness. The difficulty here is that when a living entity is situated in the mode of goodness, he becomes conditioned to feel that he is advanced in knowledge and is better than others. In this way, he becomes conditioned. The best examples are the scientist and the philosopher. Each is very proud of his knowledge, and because they generally improve their living conditions, they feel a sort of material happiness. This sense of advanced happiness in conditioned life makes them bound for the motive goodness of material nature. As such, they are attracted toward working in the motive goodness, and as long as they have an attraction for working in that way, they have to take some type of body in the modes of nature. Thus, there is no likelihood of liberation or of being transferred to the spiritual world. Repeatedly, one may become a philosopher, a scientist, or a poet, and repeatedly become entangled in the same disadvantages of birth and death. But due to the illusion of the material energy, one thinks that that sort of life is pleasant. Om Ajnana Timanandasya Gananjana Shalakaya Chakshur Unmilitam Yena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namo. The lifestyle and mode of goodness is considered by many to be a wonderful position to be in. To be a poet, a philosopher, an artist. This is considered to be a wonderful, desirable position where you can speak poetic words describing what's going on all around you and be appreciated by everyone else for your poetic words and earn a good living at it, even for those who are very accomplished in making poetic expressions. This is considered the ideal life for many, to be able to sit down somewhere and just, you know, write novels or write poetry and live this ideal life of without hectic, you know, rat race. Just sit off somewhere in your cabin in the woods and, you know, sit with your laptop computer and write novels and, you know, send them over the internet to New York City from your mountain enclave and get, you know, paychecks to expand your wilderness around your cabin more and more, you know, buy more and more acreage around your cabin. Is considered, wow, what an ideal life. I remember reading about one computer programmer. He lived in a cabin off in the woods up in California, and he would fly an airplane into to San Jose, and then he had a bicycle, and he would ride his bicycle over to the software company and deliver his work and then get back on the airplane and fly back to the woods. So this is considered by many, this sort of life is considered very ideal and wonderful life, very sattvic life. So, is it really an ideal life? We have to understand what is the actual nature of the material mode of goodness. What distinguishes it from the spiritual mode of goodness, or we can say, what is the difference between sattva-gun and shuddha-sattva-gun? The shuddha-sattva-gun, that is pure goodness. The material mode is called just goodness. So what is distinction? Distinction is, in the material mode of goodness, there are still tinges of passion and ignorance. That's why we see, again and again, we can see that people who are thought to be very nice people, good people, one day they just, they go berserk, they get laid off, they take a gun to the office and start shooting everyone. Like, everyone wonders, what happens? He was such a nice person. I used to go bowling with him on Wednesday night, and he was friendly, and, you know, he had a dog, and he took good care of his dog, and what happened? You see? So, the reality is that there's no pure position in this material world. There's always going to be tinges of passion and ignorance until we come to the transcendental platform. That transcendental platform is also called the Vasudev stage, because from Vasudev we get Vasudev. So Krishna is taking birth from the Vasudev is coming. Krishna or Vasudev is coming from Vasudev. So the Vasudev stage, the stage of pure goodness, gives birth to Krishna. Krishna comes forth from that stage of consciousness known as the Vasudev stage, or the stage of pure goodness. So we should understand very clearly and distinctly what is the difference between sattva-gun and shuddha-sattva platform. simply to be situated in the mode of goodness. There's so many problems with that mode. One of the biggest problems is they become very proud, thinking, I'm great. I'm very wonderful. I'm such a good person. I give charity, I give the United Way. I'm a very good person, And even though I screwed so many people to become rich and famous now, I'm so good, I'm just giving all this charity to everyone. So, people think themselves very great. And their happiness is one of thinking, I am great. That's their happiness. Such a good person. But that is not actually, to be a well-respected man about town is not really the perfection of our existence. You see, among the dogs, a dog will be celebrated as a very nice, of a person, the greatest character, good character. Shvavidvara ushtra karai samshtutak purusha pashu na jata karma pato peto jatu namagadagrashaha. Those persons who are like dogs, hogs, camels and asses, they praise those men who do not listen to the transcendental pastimes of Lord Sri Krishna, the deliverer from all evils. So, to be very much appreciated as a very well-respected man by the dogs, by the hogs, by the camels and the asses, what is the value of it? Is it? What is the value of such appreciation? Nowadays, all you have to do to be appreciated is have some money. You can be the biggest crook in the world, but if you have a lot of money, just like these drug lords in South America, they'll in their home village, they'll give everyone, school, preschooling for all the children, medical care, they give money like anything in their home village. So at least in their home village, their worship is a demigod. So what is the value of being appreciated in this world when you've been so sinful? What's the value of having some kind of recognition of being a good person? Unless we can actually come to the real position, the transcendental platform, the bottom line is this. Like it or not, the bottom line is we're still going to suffer. The so-called good person, sattvic person, he will also suffer in so many ways. He will. You'll see that his happy position will be eroded by old age, disease, and death. So there's really no happiness. It's an illusion of happiness only in the mode of goodness. The typical example of the mode of goodness is the demigods, you see. They're a very sattvic position. Their position is called jubilation, actually. There's so much happiness in the heavenly realm, in the Svargaloka, but still, they must give it up. Therefore, you can't really purely enjoy it. Even if you have a happiness that goes on for the entire lifespan of Lord Brahma, the knowledge that it will come to an end is a tinge of suffering mixed in with that enjoyment. So why should I suffer when I can be completely free of all tinges of anxiety? It's like someone who works hard, they save up their money, they go to Acapulco, or let's say Fiji Islands, wherever. They're on their vacation. What was the example?
Disney World.
So, they go to Disney World thinking, well, I'm really going to have a great time. And, it's all a big imagination. I'm really going to have a great time at Disney World. So, when they go there, their kid throws up in the car on the way, on the way there. It's a big problem. And then, they get there and they lost their credit, they lost their wallet somewhere, and then, it's really they went through a lot of difficulties and anxieties when they were there. And then, finally they get through it and they go, wow, I'm supposed to be enjoying now, so let me think I'm enjoying here at Disney World. And then they go here, they go there, Actually, we just read the other day somebody died in one of the rides in Disney World. Just last week, some child died in one of the rides. It killed him. So anyway, people go there thinking they'll enjoy, and then after it's over, they think, wow. But then they start thinking, no, but actually, when they get back to their hometown, their friends say, how was Disney World? They say, how was Disney World? They say, oh, it was great. We really loved it. You should go also, you see. And they start thinking, yeah, it must have been pretty good. Yeah, it was pretty good. Yeah, we really had a great time. So in this way, even though they're actually there, there was so many anxieties, and you know, the kid threw up in the car, and they lost their wallet, and so many problems and anxieties, and they got locked out of their room at the hotel. So many problems were there. Then they got a call from their dog was that they put in the kennel was in great anxiety in their separation, and. But anyway, they imagined it was really a great thing, all in all. And then years later, they had their photo album. They would sit around and think, what a great time we had at Disney World. You see? So this is our material happiness is actually like that. We're thinking, when we're actually going through, at every minute we're actually in anxiety. But because we are actually enjoyers by very nature, ananda maya bhyasa. You see, the nature of the soul is actually to enjoy. So, the soul imagines, yes, I must be happy now because I'm supposed to be happy. So he will take certain experiences in his life or her life and imagine, yes, this is a very happy thing. You see, but actually, even when it's so-called happiness, there's so much anxiety, and then they think back on it, how great it was in this way. It is called Maya Sukhaya. Actually, we are never happy in this world. Sorry to say that. I hope I didn't pop your little bubble too intrusively, but we really don't really have any happiness here. We really don't. We think that we do because actually we are meant to be happy by nature. Even though this world is a completely miserable place, because our nature is to be happy, we imagine that we're happy here. There was one popular novel written back in the 60s. I never read the book, but the title was pretty good, pretty illustrative of the material mentality. I've been down so long, it looks like up to me. So we suffer so much, we just imagine that we're happy in the middle of all this suffering. We can't bear the thought of not having happiness, because we are happy we are meant to always be happy by our spiritual identity. So we just imagine that we're happy here. We just imagine there's happiness in this material world. We see some people, their conception of happiness is a U.S. passport. Well, you've seen we were preaching in Eastern Europe, and the devotees took us to the airport. And one devotee showing he was really showing the mood that he had grown up with as a part of the Soviet Union. You know, he said, "Let me see your passport." And he just looked at it like it was the Holy Grail or something. A U.S. passport. He had never had his hands on one. You see, this was a conception in these third world countries that somehow you could have a U.S. passport with your name in it. And that would be perfection of existence. But you finally get here. You get it, you have a U.S. If somehow you came here by employment or by marriage or by birth, somehow you end up here, and you see this place is full of so many anxieties. There's so much stress here. You know, the children are so bewildered. They come to school and shoot each other with guns, shoot their teachers. This is the land of happiness. It's a horrible place. The divorce rate is just, you know, it's just unbelievable how many marriages are. How many children are growing up in broken homes? It's just a horrible mess going on here. More and more, all the time. The whole social fabric is disintegrating, you see. So we may think that we can get some happiness here, but ultimately there's no happiness. And even if we are happy, even if somehow or other we got a scene together where we really have a happy, non-hectic, peaceful atmosphere surrounding us, the deep-seated anxiety is there in the heart, knowing it will be over today or tomorrow. You see, I saved up for go on that vacation, that wonderful dream vacation in Mickey Mouse Land. But every day I'm thinking, oh my God, I'm really enjoying here with Mickey and Donald and the whole crew. But I have to go back to work next Monday morning. Oh my God. You see? So we really can't be happy in this material world. It's not possible. Even if we do have some temporary happiness here, when the mode of goodness somehow becomes prominent in our lives, that mode will not stay. The modes are always vying with each other. They're always competing for supremacy. Sometimes we become situated in the mode of goodness and have a sense of peace and happiness. Sometimes we become overwhelmed by the mode of passion and become greedy for material advancement. Sometimes we want to blot it all out in the mode of ignorance. So you can't really find a solid, steady position in this material existence. If you want to really taste the nectar, if you want to really get the real rus, you see, the real juice of existence, then there's nothing else to do except to come back to being who you really are, you see. It's actually a foolish thing. Can you realize? I mean, do you understand how stupid it is? We are trying to be these bodies. In this material world, I'm trying to be a male. Or I'm trying to be a female. You see, we're trying to be these bodies. Can you imagine what a losing proposition that is? We're not the body. It's like if I said, okay, I want you to go out there and get in that Westphalia, and I want you to be a Westphalia. You see? Such a Westphalia endeavor will definitely fail you in your attempt to become realized in the transcendental bliss that you're entitled to as a spiritual being in quality one with the Lord. You can never be happy trying to be something that you are not. The easy way to be happy is simply be who you are. They say Hare Krishna people are cultists. This is a brainwashed cult, but that is an absolute ridiculous idea. Hare Krishna consciousness philosophy is simply know who you are and be who you are. That's all we're really saying. All we're really saying is, my dear sir, would you like to know who you are? Or do you want to remain an illusion about who you really are? Would you like to know who you are? If you really like to know who you are, I'll be happy to tell you. And not only that, I can tell you how to actually be who you are and taste the eternal knowledge and bliss of your actual eternal identity. Right now, you are bewildered by temporality, ignorance, and misery. And this, my dear sir, is an unnecessary waste of your time. Because actually, you are eternal, you are full of knowledge, and you are full of bliss. So why are you living a life of poverty when you have a treasure worth $10 trillion buried in your backyard? I'm giving you a shovel to dig it up and telling you exactly where you can find it. Why are you living like a beggar on the street when you're actually the wealthiest person in the whole universe? You see? Do you realize you have a wealth right now buried in your heart more valuable than $10 trillion? And you're worried about, and you're in anxiety? What are you worrying about? You shouldn't be worrying about anything except how to come to your constitutional nature. That's the only concern we should really have. Because when we come to our constitutional nature, beyond the modes of goodness, tribhir gunamayar bhavar, evi sarvamidam jagat, mohitam navijanati lokamam amjimam yivam. Mamebhya paramabhyam. By coming to this position, beyond the modes of nature, then we taste a nectar which is so sublime that you cannot measure it by any measuring device that exists within the entire cosmic manifestation, even in the heavenly region. There's no way to measure the actual bliss of the spiritual taste by reviving his or her original identity in relationship with the supreme source of all that exists. Some people espouse atheism. But that is the most stupid, ridiculous, asinine, idiot philosophy you could ever think of. To say that there's no origin. Everything comes from something. This harmonium cover came from a tree, the tree came from a seed, the seed came from another tree. You can take anything, you know, this wire, you know, the carpet, this MP3 recorder. You know, you can take anything and find out where did it come from. And then you can see where did that come from. And if you go back until if you can find a cause that has no cause, you see, that's the original cause. Now, some people argue, well, I accept, my dear sir, that there's a chain of causality, but actually that chain of causality is infinite. So there's actually no cause of all causes. Every cause goes to another cause, and it goes on to infinity. We hear that argument. One philosopher made that counter-argument. So just imagine, we have what is called the domino theory, where you have a row of dominoes, and one domino falls other, it knocks the other one, and then boom, they all fall down. So their argument is there's an infinite row of dominoes. There's no original beginning domino, but there's an infinite row of dominoes. It goes on without end. But even if you have an infinite row of dominoes, there has to be some domino out there that falls over without on its own. You see, to start the whole thing in motion. So this idea of an infinite chain of cause and effect does not defeat the idea of the unmoved mover, of the uncaused causer. It doesn't defeat it. There has to be some domino out there that has the power to fall over on its own and put everything else into motion. So that is God. That is God. So that source of all that exists, that is the Supreme. That is Summum Bonum, the ultimate source of all the energies. That is called the Absolute Truth. Some people argue, all right, there's an Absolute Truth, but it's impersonal. It has no form, it has no personality. That source is the Brahman, and it, you know, has no form or personality. But if I gave this, if I told you, let's say every day I brought you 1 kilo of pure gold. Every day I delivered to your door 1 kilo of pure gold. You become very wealthy very fast. 1 kilo of pure gold every day delivered to your door. Now one day your curiosity may get the best of you. You say, Sankarshan Prabhu, where are you getting all this gold? I mean, this is great. I mean, keep it coming. But I just really wonder, where are you getting all this gold from? Well, I have a gold mine. Oh, really? You have a gold mine? Really? How much gold do you have in your gold mine? Well, there's no gold in the gold mine. Come on, you're lying to me. You're hiding something here. You see? So how we can say that from that original source that so many persons and forms are coming out? How can that original source, the gold mine, as it were, not have any gold in it? If so many gold is coming, so much gold is coming out of it, if so many forms and personalities have come out of that original source, then that original source must have form, it must have personality. So why are we calling it? How would you like it if I called you it? If I said to you, Vivishnam Prabhu, how is it doing today? How is it? After a few days, you might get a little tired of being called it. You see? It has a nice t-shirt today. It has a cool t-shirt on today. You might get a little tired of it after a while. You see, persons don't like being called it. So therefore, why are we referring to the Supreme Absolute Truth as impersonal? You think that pleases him? Do you think that's a way to harmonize yourself? Just like if you're married to someone, right? You're supposed to be a harmonious relationship between the husband and wife, right? You're supposed to have a harmonious relationship. So if the husband keeps referring to the wife as it, or the wife keeps referring to the husband as it, do you think there will be harmony in that marriage? No, it will be clashing going on, you see. So, do you think that we can be in harmony with that absolute truth, that supreme source of all that exists, if we keep calling it it? Of course, philosophically we can say it, but we have to understand ultimately it is a person. It's Krishna, Supreme Personality of Godhead. Of course, that's another question. How do you know we can accept, even if we accept that God as a person, all right, well, what's the gender? That's another issue these days. Is God male or female? They'll accept that God as a person. That's a whole other issue. And then if we finally resolve that one, then who is that he or she who is the Supreme? Actually, our philosophy is, it's a big debate going, is God he or she? Among certain, in certain circles, but our philosophy is God is she-he, Radha Krishna. You see. We actually put the woman first because the woman's nature is soft, and you know, women are known for being soft-hearted and men are known for being hard-hearted because that's originally there in God. Krishna is much more difficult to approach than Radharani. This is why Prabhupada taught us how to pray to Radharani. It's a very nice prayer he taught us on Radhastami. I never forgot this. He said, here's how we should pray. My dear mother, please tell about me to your Krishna. You see? She owns Krishna by her love. Krishna, she has captured Krishna. But Radharani, she is much more approachable and soft-hearted. So, if we can get her attention, my dear mother, please tell about me to your Krishna, then what will Krishna do? Actually, Radharani, here's what Radharani is. She will say, Krishna, just see, here is this devotee. He is a better devotee than me. She will actually give recommendation, my dear Shyam, my dear Shyam Sundar. Here comes one of your devotees. He is more devoted to you than I am. That is Madharani's mercy. Srimati Radharani is so kind that she will actually say to Krishna that this devotee is more devoted to you than I am. And Krishna will say, oh, more devoted than you? Let me see who this devotee is more devoted than you. You see? In this way, Radharani is very, very kind. So, we like to worship God in is she-he, Radha Krishna, Sita Ram, Lakshmi Narayan. Because the feminine aspect of God is the first aspect that we approach, Radharani, and then we approach God in masculine aspect. So we have no difficulty with the controversy. We accept God as she-he, Radha Krishna. So in this way we understand the genders in this sense of God, and we understand the name of Krishna, the name of his Ladini Shakti, the name of his Vishnu Tattvas. We actually have all complete and total scientific knowledge about God. Not only that, but we have perfect scientific knowledge even about this material world as given in the Vishnu Purana. The scientists haven't even gotten that far yet. Javada, Navalakshani, Stavara Laksha Vingshati Krimayo Rudra Sankyakaha Pakshinam Dasha Lakshanam Trinksha Lakshani Lakshani Chatur Lakshani Manasava. Let's see, no. Trinksha Lakshani Pashavaha Chatur Lakshani Manasava. We know there are 8,400,000 species, as described very carefully and clearly and distinctly in the Vishnu Purana. So the material scientists, they hadn't even counted all the species yet. And we're supposed to take their version of reality. They don't even know how many species there are running around the planet. They don't even know how many plants there are yet. They don't even know how many beasts there are, how many types of amphibious creatures. And we're supposed to accept their authority? They don't even gotten their biology and zoology together. What to speak of their metaphysics? Understanding the origin of the universe, you know, their cause, whatever they call it, cosmology, you see. So we are better to take those scientists who really know things, you know, who really understood things as they are. You see, we are not blind followers. They have their Dharma and we have our Veda Vyas. You can judge by the result who knows more, you know, Darwin or Veda Vyas. Veda Vyas can explain everything perfectly. Darwin couldn't even explain the peacock feather. He was bewildered by the peacock feather. He admitted that my theory of evolution cannot explain how this peacock feather could come into existence. You see? But we know exactly why the peacock feather came into existence. You see? To please Krishna. Krishna is the supreme dresser, you see. It's like they have that magazine, what is that called? Gentleman's Quarterly, you see. So for the gentleman who wants to be the best dressed gentleman, you see, wearing the coolest clothes, you see. He subscribes to Gentleman's Quarterly and he shops in the finest men's stores and he has the most expert tailors, you see, in this way. But actually, that original best-dressed person, that is Krishna, he is manifesting from himself this wonderful creature called the peacock, who has the most beautiful feathers, that Krishna loves to wear in his hair. You see, this is all for the pleasure of Krishna. That's why the peacock feather looks the way it does, because Krishna thinks, this is beautiful. I love the way this feather looks. Krishna is doing that just to enjoy. Actually, everything is for Krishna. All the different species, everything is for Krishna's pleasure. We understand why everything exists. We're not bewildered by, why do we have two eyes instead of three? You know, we're not bewildered. Everything is there because Krishna wants to enjoy in a certain way, and this is how he's manifesting the reality of the totality of existence emanating from him at every second. It's for his pleasure, that's all. He has no boss to report to on Monday morning. Everything he's doing is under his unlimited power. He's been eternally manifesting everything out of himself just for the purpose of enjoyment. So, in this way, we can understand the great position of the Krishna consciousness movement and of the Krishna consciousness process for bringing us out of the influence of the mode of goodness, the mode of passion, and the mode of ignorance, and bringing us to that transcendental platform where we can taste the sweetest nectar at every minute, where we can taste so much nectar that it's the whole universe can't even contain the amount of nectar that we can experience in one pure utterance of Hare Krishna. So in this way, let us make our lives perfect by holding very tightly under the feet of Srila Prabhupada and to the followers of Srila Prabhupada who are blessing us with the knowledge and the mercy of Srila Prabhupada. You see? Let us hold tightly unto Prabhupada and his followers. This is actually the statement of Narottam Das Thakur. Anande bolo hari bhaja vrindavan Shri Guru Vaishnava pade mojai aman. He is saying, you should ecstatically chant Hare Krishna. You should worship the holy Vrindavan Dham. You should always meditate. Worshipfully meditate on the lotus feet of Sri Guru and Sri Vaishnavas. So Prabhupada is blessing us with his wonderful books. He's blessing us with his wonderful self. He's blessing us with Guru. He's blessing us with Vaishnavas. So in this way, let us capitalize on this wonderful mercy coming down to us from his divine grace. Om Vishnu Pad, Paramahamsa, Padivra Chakacharja, Astatarasadashishimad, Esi Bhakti Vedanta, Tridandi, Goswami Maharaj Prabhupada, the founder Acharya of ISKCON, the International Society for Krishna Consciousness, and make our lives perfect. So we can ask now if there's any questions. Yes, Vivishman Prabhu.
Said that someone in the mode of goodness has no sin. So that means that they don't go to hell in the next life.
As described in this verse, a sattvic person who's very pious, he can continue living in that sort of a pious, but eventually they may very well degrade down. Because, you know, you can be sattvic in one life, a little less sattvic in the next life. It's possible. Because actually, Prabhupada explains our first birth is Lord Brahma. In the Bhagavatam purport, he says the very first birth we take in this world is Lord Brahma. You may be surprised to know that you were Lord Brahma in a previous lifetime. So that's a very sattvic position to be in. But we came down from that position of Lord Brahma, and now here we are, you know, struggling here with the modes of nature in Tampa, Florida, you know. So, you know, just because you're in the sattva guna now doesn't mean you're always going to be in sattva guna. Also, it can one can gradually, you know, a little less sattvic, a little less sattvic. It's like the Brahmins of India. See how much they've degraded over the generations.
Well, didn't Prabhupada explain that if you want to be in the mode of goodness, then you have to avoid the four sinful activities? He really boiled it down to a simple thing, didn't he?
Yes. For a devotee, when we take up Krishna consciousness, we situate ourselves in the mode of goodness by following, you know, avoiding the sinful activities. By following the principles, no illicit sex, no meeting, no intoxication, no gambling. We situate ourselves in the mode of goodness, but we don't just do that. We also chant Hare Krishna. You see, the following the four rules and regulations gets you to the airport. And the mantra gets you off the ground. You see.
But that brings you to the mode of goodness if you avoid those sinful activities.
Yeah, but that's not enough. If you don't chant Hare Krishna, after a while you'll think, well, here I am restraining myself, but where's the juice? Where's the nectar? You have to also chant Hare Krishna. Did Prabhupada simply give us the four rules? No, he gave us the beads also. Chant on these beads at least 16 rounds a day. Because the mode of goodness without transcendental goodness eventually will degrade. You will not be satisfied simply in the mode of goodness. Eventually you'll get tired of it. You see?
I think it's rare to find anyone in the mode of goodness these days.
It's extremely rare. Prabhupada gives examples here. Of course they're, you know, they're not perfectly in the mode of goodness. He gives the example of scientists and philosophers, and there are certainly many scientists kicking around the material world, and we know how rajasic and tamasic they are in many ways, no doubt. But in some ways they are sattvic. Some way the philosophers, the poets, and the scientists are sattvic. Not purely. But that's the meaning of the mode of goodness also. If it was pure, they'd be in, you know, on the transcendental platform. There's always degrees of sattva and Tama and Raja, as long as we're in the mode of goodness. That's the meaning of the material mode of goodness. It is tinged by passion and ignorance. The only way to become purely a Brahman is to take up Krishna consciousness.
Vaishnava.
You see? So we chant Hare Krishna. We come to the mode of goodness by following these principles. And then we see many people who were raised in a very sattvic way in India. They were vegetarian, they were celibate, they didn't smoke. When they come to America, what do? Indian people, many people came here pure. They came here, think, well, when in Rome, do as the Romans do, you know. When in America, do as the Americans do. Let me try out this Kentucky Fried, Big McDonald, everything, and they become polluted. So, if you want to maintain your goodness, then you have to come to the transcendental platform. Otherwise, if sooner or later, your goodness will be eroded by the influence of Kali. The personality of Kali is out to get everyone, is in the mode of goodness, to pull him down to the passion and ignorance. Kali is very pernicious personality.
Pernicious?
Yeah, evil, wicked character. Personality of Kali is out to get everyone and pull him down in the passion and ignorance, ultimately. He's scheming how he can pull everyone down. So he's out, those people in goodness, he's trying to degrade them. You see, and there's so many influences for degrading. Everything is becoming more and more degraded in this material world. The entertainment, the billboards. I mean, it's just shocking.
And Prabhupada said, one day, boom.
Yes, that very well may happen. It already happened in New York City. No one thought such a thing could happen as 911. You see, no one thought such a thing could happen. This is simply an accumulation of karma. If we want to try to prevent, if we feel some compassion for the people, and we don't want to see them go through some horrible thing like what's happening in Baghdad right now, you see. And we should spread this Krishna consciousness movement. That's the only thing that can save this in the world situation. Otherwise, the whole civilization will deteriorate. The whole thing will dismantle and deteriorate, you see. Because we're so much out of sync with our source, Krishna, God. Our thinking, our speaking, our acting is not in harmony with God. So we have an enlightened master, Srila Prabhupada, who knows perfectly well the art of how to synchronize, how to harmonize every thought, how to perfectly dovetail every thought, every word and every deed and every time, place and situation with the Supreme Person. So we have to take shelter of such an enlightened spiritual master, and we have to become such properly situated persons ourselves to show an example for others. If someone says, well, how do I become a pure devotee? I say, well, just meditate on Prabhupada. Well, that's true, but they say, well, you didn't become a pure devotee, and you've been doing this for 30 years. I see you have so many bad habits. You lose your temper, you're lusty, you're greedy, you're angry. You see? And you've been doing it for 30 years. So what should I think? We, each one of us has to be, we need to become pure devotees also.
I can't imagine you losing your temper.
Huh?
I can't imagine you losing your temper.
Ah. Well, I tried. By Prabhupada's mercy, gradually these things do go away. If one really sticks to this process very, very sincerely, that I want to please my spiritual master, I want to become pure of every thought, every word, and every deed, in every situation, we really sincerely try, then it's amazing how powerful His mercy is. That even if we had all lusty, greedy, angry nature, if we just stick to the process on a regular daily basis, we regularly do it every day. You see, keep working at it. Just any somebody wants to win the Olympics, they got to work out every day. You see, somebody wants to become purified, they got to do their sadhana very devotedly every day. Chant with intensity, pray with intensity, offer the prasadam with feeling, not just mechanically, namaham Vishnu Padaya, eat. No. Put feeling into everything. Do bhaktya, with love, you see. When you offer an arti, I was there when you, I think you were there also in Atlanta when Prabhupada came to Atlanta. Were you there?
Atlanta, I was there, yes.
Yeah, remember how he offered the arti to Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati?
So meditative.
So, I mean, he was really, his whole heart was into that arti. So when I'm offering arti to Prabhupada, I just think, how Prabhupada is offering the Bhakti Siddhanta Sarasvati the arti. Let me try to dive somehow by his mercy to dive into that mood as far as I can when I'm offering this arti to Prabhupada. So in this way we have to You know, we have to be very meditative and deep on one hand, on the other hand, be very aggressive to, you know, make a revolution on the planet. Both things simultaneously. Going deep within and being very eager to, you know, revolution, turn the whole world upside, to actually put the world right side up again. It's already upside down. Our mission is to put it right side up again. See, the Kali Yuga has made everything upside down now. Lord Chaitanya's movement is to put everything up right side up again. Maharaj Parikshit gave the personality of Kali some place of residence. Is that our mission in ISKCON? To give Kali some place of residence? Yes. Our place of residence for the personality of Kali is in the Bhakta Ashram. We want to make him a devotee. Bhakta Kali. We want to make the personality of Kali a devotee. Saved up, tilak, neck beads. You see, that is the perfection of our movement. And we can make the personality of Kali into a devotee. You see, that's why Bhakti Sananda Sarasvati Thakur said, when the high court judges wear tilak, then we are successful. Talk about personalities of Kali, those cartoon characters up there in Washington, Supreme Court. They are the personification of Kali in so many ways. They legalized abortion, those rascals up there, you see. So just imagine if we get the high court judges in tilak, you know, have a little kirtan every day when they come to the Supreme Court. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna. Okay, let's make our judgments today. That will be the success of our movement, you see. So on the one hand, we want to go very, very deep within. On the other hand, we're thinking, how can I get tilak on those high court judges' foreheads? Not artificially, but how can we preach in such a way that we can actually have the Supreme Court run by Vaishnavas one day, someday soon. Vaishnavas on the high court. So anyway, any other questions? Yes.
Last night, actually, we were reading that the soul has senses and it has a form.
Yes.
So when we are taking prasad and when we are doing devotional service, and when we taste the prasad, is it through the material senses or through the senses of the soul?
Well, actually, the soul is... The soul, the more you take prasadam, your soul is waking up. You see? The soul is actually who you are, but the soul has gone into a deep sleep and transferred his sense of identity to the material nature, the material body, and the material mind also. The soul has, you know, his sense of, her sense of identity is shifted over to the material nature. So it's a very artificial position. But when you take prasadam, what you're doing is you're reversing the flow of energy back toward the actual spiritual identity of who you are. By taking prasadam, you're reviving your identity as the eternal spiritual being. So that eternal spiritual being is actually taking prasadam, actually, you know, connecting with, actually reviving his or her lost relationship with Krishna through honoring prasadam, through chanting Hare Krishna, through hearing discourse on the Bhagavad Gita, etc., through seeing the deities. Your actual spirit soul is waking up and becoming, you know, after being asleep for countless eons of existence in the cycle of birth and death, your spiritual nature now is actually becoming awakened. Just like a person in deep sleep, you shake them and they go, ah. You see, you're waking up. You're waking up now. You're coming out of the thinking you're an Indian woman. You're actually coming to the realization that you're an internal spiritual being in quality, one with God. Yes?
Because the soul has the senses. These senses are actually dead matter. If the soul doesn't have the senses, we cannot enjoy anything with these dead senses. Can we?
The soul actually...
Because of the soul, these senses we can enjoy.
The presence of the soul is known because consciousness is present in that dead matter. The soul has, the symptom of the soul is consciousness. Just as the sun is known by the presence of sunshine, the soul is known by the presence of consciousness. So the tasting is One could ask, is my tongue tasting, or is the soul tasting through the tongue? The soul is actually tasting. The body cannot taste. It's just an instrument through which the sensation of taste can be transferred. That's all. Are the eyes seeing, or is the soul seeing through the eyes? Are the ears doing the hearing, or the soul hearing through the ears? So actually, the soul is tasting through the medium of the material senses. The soul is tasting, and the more he tastes, the more he's actually awakening his original purified senses, which are there in the eternal spiritual body. That's in a dormant state right now. The original spiritual form, Prabhupada explains, is in a dormant condition. Right? The soul present in the material body is 1/10,000th tip of a hair. One time Prabhupada said it's like a geometric point, which has no actual physical dimension. So the soul is present in the material world in that minute form, but in the spiritual world, which has nothing to do with the time and space of this world, the soul actually... And when you become purified completely, then the soul comes out with a form. Yeah. That's the human form. Another interesting point is that actually every soul has a human form, even the ones that take up being a butterfly or a flute. They simply take on that form to serve Krishna, but actually every soul, Prabhupada explains, has a human form in the liberated state. Every soul has a human form. You know. But for rasa, they act as a calf or a blade of grass or what have you. Any other question? Yeah.
Going back to this people in sattva guna are sinful, but Krishna says in the Bhagavad Gita also, anyone just even sattva guna, like vegetarian, they cook the food for themselves and eat. They enjoy it.
Sattva guna?
So they are sinful. They are eating only meat.
Yes.
So how can that they be sinful?
Yes, when we say that they're... When we say they may, you know, be a vegetarian, for example. No, it's even the sattvic person is still sinful. It's just not as grossly sinful as the rajasic, tamasic crew. You see? No, they're also committing sin.
I think it's not sinful enough to go to hell. We'll take a human body. But there's still karma.
Yeah, they're doing enough pious activities to kind of like counterbalance it to where they can at least keep coming back as a human being. That's right. But they're not progressing. And they can easily regress to the influence of the age.
They're not sinless. No,
they're not. If they were sinless, completely sinless, you have to understand the. If you look here at this verse here, you see nirmalatvat. Nirmala means without any dirt, without any contamination. And vat means possessing the quality. What is the word-for-word definition given by Prabhupada? Being purest in the material world. In other words, they're not really pure. They're relatively pure, but they're not absolutely pure.
Higher than passion and ignorance.
That's right. They're relatively sinless, but they're not absolutely sinless. Only on the pure platform of the real nirmala platform. There's the relative nirmala and the absolute nirmala. That's the difference. The material... The mode of goodness is relative nirmala, relative to passion and ignorance. And the transcendental platform is absolute nirmala. It's completely free from all sin. So they are only relatively sinless, and they're not as sinful as the other folks out there, the rajaguni, tamaguni types. Is that clear? Everything has made sense now to everyone? Everything I said has made sense to you? Nothing has bewildered your brain? It's all clear? Clear as a bell. Clear as a, you know. Okay.
Coming to the prasadam, the energy that is transmitted from prasadam, on that point I would like to say something. I know a friend of mine, she practices meditation. She goes into a trance, she does about 30 to 40 minutes of meditation, and she's out. And you know, I can see a different kind of, in her eyes, I can see something different. She's not the same person. When she's about to sit for meditation, there is nothing in her eyes. I don't see anything different. She's a normal person to me. But after she finishes her meditation, and I look into her eyes, I see deep down there is a path on which even I want to travel.
Okay. But why doesn't she look that way all the time?
I don't know.
Because it's only a temporary benefit. That's fine. It wears off. When you become highly absorbed in Krishna consciousness, her meditative state, she can't maintain it all the time. You see? But when you become purely absorbed in Krishna bhakti, then you can maintain a meditative state 24 hours a day. Do you imagine Arjuna was on a battlefield killing enemies in a pure state of meditation? You see? So do you work professionally? Or are you a housewife?
I worked as a teacher earlier, now I'm a housewife.
Okay. So you've seen, you're aware of all the different atmospheres.
Yes.
That it's. So just imagine if you could do your duties as a housewife or as a professional and be purely absorbed in a meditative state, that every second of the 24 hours, you see. That is called Krishna consciousness.
So when we say 24 hours of meditative state, what kind of a state is that?
That means, but one who is highly advanced in Krishna consciousness, they can directly perceive everything within Krishna and Krishna within everything through all of their senses. You see? Through their eyes, through their ears, through their nose, through their touch and their tongue. They can actually experience Krishna within everything and Krishna and everything within Krishna. Premanjana charita bhakti valochanena santaksa daiva hridayeshu valoka yanti yang shama shundanam achintya ganasvarupam govindam adipurusham tamaham bhajami. Because their eyes and all of their senses actually have become anointed with the ointment of love of God, they can perceive Krishna everywhere, both within and without. So that is, you see, the other meditations may give you some temporary sense of euphoria, some peace. There's many different meditation techniques, like there's pranayama, there's so many things.
Even that meditation is not recommended for this age. Meditation is not recommended.
It's not practical. The reason meditation is not, you cannot practically remain in meditation is formerly when meditation was the system for self-realization, they would sit down and meditate uninterrupted for 60,000 years in the Satya Yuga. They would go to some secluded place, and they wouldn't take nail clippers, they wouldn't take a credit card, they wouldn't take their laptop, They wouldn't take their dog or their family or their car or nothing. They would just sit down in a secluded place and meditate for 60,000 years. Their nails become humongous, matted locks. And if a tiger came, they just sit there. Fearlessly sit there. Whatever happens, happens. If he eats me, all right, I'm just going to sit here and meditate. Nothing will disturb meditation. Through all varieties of heat and cold. Now, what is the facility to do that now? Where can you go and sit down and meditate now? You see? You can say, well, I'll go to the national forest. Well, they'll come. The park ranger will come. Where's your permit? You see?
It's a permit to meditate.
If you say, well, I'll buy some property and I'll do it there. Well, we got to pay your taxes on the land. There was some yogi, one of my fellow devotees, he went to India many years ago. He read in the newspaper in India, there were some yogis. Even in India, it's now hard to find a place where you can sit down peacefully and meditate. So there were some yogis who actually buried themselves. They were so powerful in yoga, they buried themselves alive in the earth. Can you imagine? It didn't kill them. They didn't suffocate. They buried themselves alive in the earth so they could meditate for many, many years. Who knows? Hundreds of years they planned to meditate. They had the ability, the yogic power to do that. And you know what happened? Somebody had an idea to build a building there. And they came with the tractors and they dug up the earth and they found these yogis buried alive. These yogis were so angry. They completely lost all their mental equilibrium. They were so angry. Their meditation had been interrupted by the tractor digging them up. You see? So in this age, the meditational process, it is a bona fide system, but it requires many thousands of years to perfect. So you may get some temporary sense of euphoria, you know, for a few, you know, for 5 minutes after your meditation is over. Wow, I'm floating in this cloud, you know. Ooh. You see? Wow, I'm really spiritual, and I just feel really deep within, and oh, wow, this is cool. But and you might go look at it and go, wow, she's really in a high place, you know. You know, but it doesn't last. You can't maintain it. You still got to pay your bills. You just got to get in your car and turn the ignition on and drive here. And this is not a practical system, but the bhakti yoga system, you can do everything. You can be a housewife, you can be a professional, you can be a prime minister, you can be a street sweeper, you can be a retired person, you can be a little child in kindergarten chanting Hare Krishna in your kindergarten. Everyone can practice Krishna consciousness and achieve the supreme perfection. The meditators, they're interested in attaining nirvana. But Krishna says in the Bhagavad Gita, he says this Krishna consciousness is paramam nirvanam. This is the supreme nirvana. You see. And the Bhagavatam says nirvana vilambitani. This is that which minimizes the value of nirvana. You see. Bhakti is the real platform of meditation. You want to achieve a meditational state, we will teach you how to achieve the perfect meditational state. That you can be absorbed in 24 hours daily without ever being pulled out of it. You see. And you'll be so powerful in that meditation, you can teach hundreds of other people also how to achieve that. We will train you how to do that if you want. So any other questions?
But, yes. Meditation,
tell me louder. Yes, it is not impersonal. One can say, okay, I'm going to meditate, I'm going to sit down, just like I studied under one yogi before I found Prabhupada, I was searching for a guru. So I went to one guru, he had me meditating on a candle flame, you know, sitting there staring at that flame, you know. But how long can you get satisfied by looking at a flame? If I was an Indian parent and I said, okay, I mean, my dear son, I have your wife for you, and you know, you're going to love this, it's going to be great. And he said, okay, here's the way in marriage, and it's a candle flame. I'm going to marry you to this candle flame. For the rest of your life, you're just going to serve and meditate on this candle flame. Will the son be happy? Oh, my dear father, you give me such a nice wife. I can have such a... Well, she may not argue, but... Well, that's another point. But anyway, I'm really going to have a wonderful relationship with this flame. Can you be satisfied just having a relationship with a flame? That sort of meditation will... You may feel some relief for a while. I'll have to think about this, the problem, and that problem. After a while, you go, what in the world am I doing simply sitting here looking at a candle flame? You see? So, if you can meditate on the most wonderful, beautiful person who has unlimited qualities, unlimited activities, who's bestowing unlimited mercy directly on you at every minute. Wouldn't that be more interesting? Meditation? Much easier to absorb the mind. So this is called natural meditation. To meditate on something impersonal or void or a candle flame, that is called unnatural meditation. It may give temporary relief, but it cannot give permanent and lasting relief. So therefore, we are teaching you there are three different types of meditation. There's meditation on the impersonal Brahman platform, there's meditation on the Paramatma platform, and there's meditation on the Bhagavan platform. This Bhagavan platform is the platform where you can remain in a meditative state for all of eternity and never come down. So kindly take this pathway of Krishna Bhakti and make your life perfect. That is our humble request. Hare Krishna. Any other questions? I know we're probably going way over time now. I don't want to get yanked, like the old vaudeville, they would take a cane and put it around the actor's neck and yank him off the stage. I don't want to get yanked off the asana here with a cane by the temple president. So, and we will stop here. Kantaraj. Raja Vidya, Srimad Bhagavad Gita Ki Jai, Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai.
Oh.